What's up? You are now listening to Americanized, a storytelling podcast where you'll hear from eclectic first and second generation Americans share their stories and real life experiences as children of immigrants. Right now, the world for our friends in cities around the world like Gaza and Goma is unlivable and traumatizing. And those are just understatements. My heart goes out to them. And if you're also feeling helpless in this time, here are some resources to stay informed and support the children and families. TaxpayersForPeace.org. This website provides a lot of factual information on what's going on in Gaza right now and potential action steps that you can take. 5calls.com is a website that allows you to call your congressperson to help influence different policies. AFCS.org offers 6 ways you can support Palestinians in Gaza, and that article will be linked in the episode notes, as well as SaveTheChildren.net, where you can financially support different cities in need around the world. All of these resources will be linked in the episode notes. Americanized is back, and the hiatus was much needed, but now it's over. This was a long hiatus. All of my equipment is dusty. It's a little embarrassing, but we're back with some new episodes, and I'm happy to bring them to you. I'm your host, Rosin Clarudone, and you're listening to Americanized. It was a 6-month break. So what happened over the past 6 months? I will share those with you in future episodes, but I do want to recap my trip that I mentioned in the last episode. My husband Parker, my sister Nikki, and I, we all traveled to Cote d'Ivoire for 3 weeks in August, and it was an amazing, amazing time. Here's a snippet of our time at the Ivor Trade Center, which is, it's a space with restaurants and different shops, and it's a fancy atmosphere. And there's this one restaurant that has karaoke nights. I think it's on Fridays, and I recorded a little bit of it. So have a listen to have a sense of the vibrant culture of Cote d'Ivoire and how much fun it is.
He's not buying us plantain chips.
Huh?
You think this guy's gonna buy us plantain chips?
Oh my gosh, he would. No.
He'd steal our plantain chips.
We arrived in Cote d'Ivoire on August 7th, and we stayed there for 3 weeks. And over those 3 weeks, we definitely experienced so much love and joy from being surrounded with family members and friends. We did run into some friends while we were there. And anytime I go back home, it's very life-altering, and it just makes you think of so many different things of what your life is like, where you are in your life now, where it could be, what would happen if you moved back home and lived there. And the crazy part about being back home and then returning back to the US is that while you're leaving the country, life still goes on back home. Like, they're still in their routine, doing their day-to-day activities, while you're just in and out kind of visiting. And that to me is like, it's a little unsettling, for that's the best word that came to mind right now. It's a little unsettling because it's just two different ways of living, two different lives. When I came back to Boston, I was very, very sad for a while. I was so sad because I felt like everything was so quiet and bland and like gray and boring. I remember driving to work the day after we landed. We flew, I think it might have been a Sunday, we left Ivory Coast to come to Boston, and I had work the very next day. Driving to work was just very sad. I think I cried on the way to work because I was like, I don't really want to be here and do this. I would rather be back home with my sister and my niece and my nephew and just have a more relaxed way of living and being surrounded by the love of the country and the country's people and the food and the culture and the music and the vibrancy and all of that. But coming back to Boston was hard. It was hard. It left me really sad. And I mean, I'm able to jump back into the routine of things pretty easily, but deep down in my core, emotionally, I was not really there. Going back to our time there over those 3 weeks, we did a lot. It was a full 3 weeks. And shout out to Desiree, bilingual guide, my second cousin Desiree. He really did it for us when we went down to Bassam and to Assini and guided us with different workshops. So outside of eating all the good food that we did while we were there, we did go to the beach. We went to my cousin's traditional wedding. Parker and I did our traditional ceremony, which was really meaningful and beautiful. We went to different family members' homes, we went to the markets, went to the pools, went to a historical museum, we did the batik workshop, which was shared on Instagram, we made chocolate, which was a cool and long, long process. We hit up some clubs and some bars, we did a boat ride, we went to the national park, which is another story that will be in another episode, because a lot went down at the national park. So, in the last episode, I shared excerpts from the story Homecoming, The Intimacy of Meeting My Jamaican Family, written by Diane Abbott, which is featured in the anthology Black Joy by Charlie Brinkhurst-Cuff and Timmy Sotir. And I love anthologies, I love that book, I love the stories in there. And I loved reading the story and being able to relate to it. In her story, Diane Abbott wrote about the way that Jamaican passengers habitually applaud as their plane is landing in Jamaica. And for these passengers, this brings a sense of intense relief and delight as being away from the racial microaggressions in the UK. The book is UK-based, but we could say the same for America, anywhere that is not homogenous, anywhere that has oppressors, you know, anywhere that races are intermixed and people can be racist or be microaggressive. So leaving that, going to Jamaica, going to any other homogenous country that is your own. So for Diane, leaving that atmosphere and going to Jamaica and these other Jamaican passengers who were leaving the UK to land in Jamaica, they would clap because they're relieved that they are leaving that negative environment and space into something that's way different. And so, when we were flying to Cote d'Ivoire, you know, I was hoping to experience that again, because the first time that we landed in Cote d'Ivoire, almost 10 years ago, people clapped when we landed, and I thought, that was interesting. Like, the first few times that I traveled to Cote d'Ivoire, the first time I was with my dad, the second time I went with my mom, and on both of these trips, people clapped when we landed in Cote d'Ivoire. However, my past two trips, there was no clapping whatsoever when we landed. And I know I said I would clap, and I may have clapped a little bit to the side on, you know, a little clap, but it wasn't loud. I wasn't setting any trends here. I was more so looking for other people to clap to see, you know, and it, the way I'm talking about it doesn't sound like a huge deal, but after reading the story and seeing why the Jamaican passengers clap, you would hope that Africans would do the same thing. But the past two trips, I haven't heard anybody clapping, and I was ready for it. I even got my phone ready to record the applause for the purpose of this episode. But there was no clapping, and it just makes me wonder, like, why are we not embracing landing in our home countries? Why are we not clapping? Do we also not feel the sense of release and delight being away from racial micro and macro aggressions? So I thought more about who are the passengers, right? What is the population of these passengers? What is their generational status? Are they just visiting the country and they have to return to live in a more non-homogenous country? Are they just younger and they're not really You know, I don't know. It was just strange because the book affirmed what I had previously experienced and I was hoping to re-experience that. But then I didn't, so I was just wondering, who are the passengers and why are we not clapping? Maybe it's the airline? I don't know. There's many factors that could contribute to why. But I just realized that the first two times I went to Cote d'Ivoire with my parents and adults from the country, there was clapping. And the last two times I went with my husband, my sister, you know, people who were not directly from the country, and there was no clapping. Not to say that there weren't other adults on the plane, or there weren't young adults flying on their own when I went the first two times. So I'm just so curious to know what is behind that. I just wanted to share that there was no clapping when I thought there would be, and I'm curious as to why that is the case. Again, on the surface, it's not a huge deal, just a weird curiosity that I have because of what Diane Abbott describes the reasoning behind the clapping on the plane as it lands. And I just smiled so much when I read that part of the story because I understood it and I had experienced it before and I was, you know, hoping it could come together full circle, but it didn't. So it was just interesting that that was the case. My question to you is, have you experienced people clapping on the plane as it landed? Whether you landed somewhere in the US or somewhere outside of the US, was this place where your family is from, your family is not from? Like, what is your experience with clapping on the airplane? I think that's all I have for you guys today. Thank you so much for listening. The resources can be found in the episode notes. Be sure to check those out, and I will catch you in the next episode. All original music produced by Stubborn Soul. That's STBRNSAL. Be sure to find him on all music listening platforms.